100 episodes and still going strong. We'll take a look back and a look forward on this episode of The Hot Zone.
This is The Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hey folks, I'm so excited for this episode because it's the 100th episode of the podcast. I can't believe it. When I started this thing, I decided I'm going to do 100 episodes and I'm going to decide whether or not we're going to keep going. And let me tell you, I'm having so much fun with this thing. Now, it's not making a whole bunch of money yet, but we are helping a lot of people. And I'm getting to tell the kind of news that I want to tell, the way I want to tell it, without any agenda. Just tell it the way it is. And if I want to talk about my faith or if I want to talk about something else, I just do because it's my thing. And I really like that. I'm really grateful to OpsLens.com for bringing us on and helping to publicize the podcast. And we've got some really good things kind of in the hopper for the podcast that may really help to kind of standardize this and kind of make it better in lots of different ways. And so I hope if you've been watching the podcast, you've been enjoying what you've seen so far. And I hope that you'll keep watching and share it with your friends because we got a whole lot more coming up. What I want to do this episode is I just want to look back at the last couple of years of trips and reports that I've done, not just for the podcast, but for NRA TV and for CBN News and other places, and just give you a sense of some of the places that I've been over the last couple of years, because we use a lot of my previous content in the podcast just when it's relevant for whatever's going on today. But I want you to know we haven't even touched the half of it yet. There's so much content out there. And I just want to show you some of the places that I've been. And just if you're like me, you're just going to go, man, you travel too much. Take a look. So this is the other end of the stepped up airstrikes as we try to really root out the last elements of ISIS in a place called Susa, right? Just a couple kilometers from here. We can hear the fighting going on. And this group of people just showed up who had escaped that area. This family behind me is only the father, the son, and the little daughter that are left of 20 people. The rest died when an airstrike hit their house in the middle of the night about 10 days ago. But it took them 10 days to be able to raise the money to pay ISIS to allow them to leave. And that's apparently what's happening. And so we're getting a better sense now of just the horrors of living inside that enclave, the last stand of ISIS.
You're being so incredibly confrontational, and I'm just trying to have a conversation.
I am not, you know why I'm not
because to me, we have to bridge this divide.
That would be great. Would you come on NRA TV and bridge this divide?
If I have more than my time,
we would love to have you. Sure.
I'm all done again.
You bet.
Bye. Thank you.
Grant Stinchfield would love to talk to you, Alyssa. He would.
So obviously she didn't want to talk to us. And there you have the freeze frame. Please, let's go back to that if we can, because that's very important. There you have the gun in his on his hip, clearly visible in that video. And Chuck did a tremendous job proving once again that these leaders of the anti-gun marches, protests, whatever you want to call it, find the need to surround themselves with armed security.
This Assyrian Christian church is in the eastern suburb of Bartala. That's a suburb of Mosul. And you can see what happened when ISIS came in. It was burned and razed. And the people of this area are really looking forward to getting back into their homes. But this, unfortunately, is what they'll find when they get here. And you can imagine by what you see here how many years it will take to get things back to normal. I am definitely not in the worst part of town trying to pick up prostitutes. This rooftop I'm standing on is only about 2 kilometers from the forward line of troops. The front line's right there in Old Town Marawi behind me. We're hearing bullets go by here right now as I speak, and there's a massive volume of fire and explosions happening behind me. That says that the Philippine Army is trying to end this thing sooner rather than later. There's still a couple hundred ISIS troops that are holding out to the end down there, and it's evident from what we're hearing they are not going down without a fight. That
was definitely around. Oh, okay. This is no joke. We're 2 kilometers from the front lines, and just as I finished that stand-up, we had about 3 rounds come in, I mean, close enough that they hit the rooftop right beside me over there. And we're getting down off this roof right now. What's going on behind me is exactly what the rescuers hope not to find, and that is a body. This one happened to be an 11-year-old girl who was buried in the rubble. And so now comes the delicate process of having to remove the remains. This is why we need a new border fence. You can see here on the old fence where the drug runners actually cut a door in this metal border wall and put in hinges where they could just flip this up, drive truckloads full of dope right through there, and put it back down. I can guarantee you that's not going to happen with any of those new border fences, and that's one of the reasons why this needs to happen.
So I'm just outside of Tapachula in southern Mexico, and a group of migrants just walked by. They're behind the main group, but it's still a couple hundred people, and they were stopped by some immigration agents in several immigration vans, basically just encouraging them to take the legal steps necessary to declare asylum in Mexico. But the migrants didn't like that idea and they ran off. You see some Black Hawk helicopters going overhead here that are delivering aid for sure out to this eastern section of Puerto Rico. You know, as we've been driving along the freeway out here, one of the most heartbreaking things I've seen is that they've put a lot of money into green energy initiatives here on this island to try to have a more stable power supply and cheaper power supply by using the sun and wind. Well, just back here a little ways, we saw some wind turbines that were completely shredded. Right here behind me, there's a big solar farm that is just completely destroyed. And they're gonna have to rebuild this from the ground up. This is not something that's gonna be easily repaired.
15 seconds. That's about all the time you would have to get your children to safety here in the city of Sderot, only about a kilometer from the border with Gaza. That's because over 30,000 rockets have been fired at this city since 2001. And it's gotten to the point where there are one bomb shelter for every 2.5 people in this city. As a matter of fact, they've even made these playgrounds into bomb shelters. This caterpillar behind me is actually a bomb shelter, camouflaged. And they try to make it a game for the kids so that they can kind of avoid some of the post-traumatic stress issues that come from living under this kind of a threat for your entire life.
As front lines covered the violent protests that marked the inauguration of Donald Trump January 20th, some of the signs being displayed advocated socialism as the cure for what ails America. We decided to visit a real socialist country to find out if socialism is indeed the cure.
Once the Venezuelans get across the bridge into the little border town of Cucuta, Colombia, the first thing they have to do is exchange their currency. So this is where the tunnels come out, inside of these homes, which are now, as you can see, absolutely destroyed. This one looks like it might have got hit by a bomb or something. And this has been cleared, but many of these houses are still wired up with IEDs. And so we have to be very careful where we go here. And who knows how long it'll take before the people can come back and try to rebuild their lives.
Right now I'm flying over Mexico Beach, and they say it looks like it's been bombed. Well, having been to Mosul, Iraq, in the last couple of years, I can tell you that it actually does look real similar. The difference is I'm looking at houses that are completely turned upside down, or houses that have been not just blown up, but picked up and moved and set down in the middle of the street. That's just not something you see in a war zone. This is absolutely astonishing. I mean, when you look at the scale of the destruction right here, there were houses all along right here before the storm, and now there are just concrete slabs.
These are captured IEDs that the Syrian Defense Forces picked up that were made by ISIS. These cases were meant for lights, and they took them, they mixed up this kind of homemade plastic explosive here, very, very toxic, and packed these IEDs, these metal cases, full of this explosive, put a detonator charge in here, And all it needs now is an electrical current to set these off. You can see all these things. We're being told that in the area where the worst fighting is right now, that there are IEDs like this everywhere, that they are attached to light switches and attached to pressure plates and everything out there. They told us, don't go anywhere that hasn't already been cleared, because these things are very, very dangerous. Obviously, this could easily kill a man.
Everyone that we talked to agreed that socialism is definitely a cure worse than the disease.
This morning, we're at a prison about an hour outside of San Salvador called Apanteos. And it's a very overcrowded place. They have over 5,000 inmates in a prison that was built for 1,800. The United States government actually provides some help to this prison and the prison system here in El Salvador by providing some equipment and things like that. I guess the concept is that it's cheaper for us to help them here prevent people from getting into a life of crime and coming to the United States than it would be to do what we're doing now, which is arrest them in the United States and deport them back here. The residents of South Texas are anxious to get back into their neighborhoods and start the cleanup process. But you can see here, even the highest house in this whole neighborhood is still under a foot of water. And experts are saying it could take up to 2 weeks before the water recedes enough for people to start coming back in. By then, there could be so much mold in these houses that they'd have to be completely destroyed.
All right, so this is a little pueblo called Escuintla in Chiapas State. These migrants have been walking since about 4 o'clock this morning. It's now 9 a.m., and they've still got about 25 miles to go to reach their goal today. So we just found a refugee camp that has about 40 or 50 Syrians in it. The police told us not to go here, but I talked to a couple of the refugees across the fence, and these two guys from Aleppo, and I'm going to try to get them to come out of the gate and talk to me. But Dennis, you better get the hidden camera out, because I don't want to get in trouble.
Waiting my number when I cross.
You'll go hungry. You can't cross the fence.
No.
That's
nobody
bad.
Can, no.
That's bad.
So this is Lumberton, North Carolina, and the town is flooding already, but the river over there is cresting its banks now, and these heavy machinery are working very hard to try to stop the levee from breaking, because if it does, this is going to be a whole lot worse. I've never seen such a sense of urgency from heavy machinery like this, because these guys know how desperate this situation is becoming, and as you can see, it is still raining very hard, as it has been for almost 4 days now. This favela that they're training in today is one that they've already cleared, so we know that it's safe. But you can see the tactical way that they learn to move, and that's because you don't really know who the bad guys are until they're shooting at you. And as you can see, there are women and children in here, and they have to go right by all these civilians. And the level of training that it takes to keep from shooting people that don't need to be shot is really high.
Guys, he's with NRTV. Do not interview with him.
NRA TV.
NRA TV. Do not interview with
him. So I'm taking it. You don't want to give me an interview?
Absolutely not.
Well, you are, though.
Chuck Holter with NRTV.
Holton. Chuck Holton.
Do not interview. Ignore that man.
Sure.
Hey, folks. How's it going? This is Chuck Holton, and I am in Cúcuta, Colombia tonight in a really seedy part of town, and that's putting it mildly, I would say. As a matter of fact, you probably will see me here in about 15 seconds past a couple of nice ladies of the night who are engaged in, they're normal, probably what they normally do here at night. And there's one. So, this is not the kind of place you'd want to bring your kids, of course. Okay, we are right about an hour from the eye of the storm, and it is getting pretty
pretty windy out here. This is 15-year-old Zainab, and she's obviously in great pain here. She had her arm traumatically amputated in an airstrike about 2 weeks ago. They've been moving toward the front lines with the Peshmerga here. Her mother was killed, her uncle was killed, her father was wounded, and her brother was wounded as well. And this is some of the horrors that are really on full display here that are only going to get worse as the fight for Mosul continues. So you're Mike Isaacson, right?
Who are you?
I'm Chuck Holton. You're the one that tweeted about teaching future dead cops, right? Are you the one that made that tweet?
Yeah.
How does it feel being protected by those cops?
I am not being protected.
You're not? I see hundreds of cops around here protecting you.
Do a pan real quick.
You really feel that way about police officers?
I think policing is an unjust system in and of itself, and especially within the capitalist system.
So when I was here 2 weeks ago, that bridge back behind me had like 10 or 20,000 people on it. I mean, it was absolutely packed. Now it's empty, but people are not. Come on, man. Come on, man.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
San Francisco is working hard, and the state is working hard to take away our freedoms. I mean, it's almost like a ruling class or an elitist class where the hypocrisy is just too much to bear at this point.
Okay, so we talk about this on the podcast all the time, that I want to help you not only understand the news, but I want to help you make the news and make it better. And so here we are. We just got to Cúcuta, Colombia. Okay, and I met a woman on the plane who missed her flight, so she's stuck here in Cúcuta. So it's such a simple thing to fix this problem. It's about $18 to get them a room for the night down close to the border. It's another $10 or so to get them a taxi. So for $28 or $30, we can save them from having to sleep on the street tonight, or who knows what they'd have to do. So that's what we're going to do.
Pretty much everybody I talk to envies the United States for our Second Amendment.
Every time I touch the United States, I smell the freedom that you can have in that country. And the Second Amendment in the United States is a rock.
Now, you know, ask yourself, how much do you know about the French Constitution? How much do you know about the Constitution in Liechtenstein, right? But those people all know about the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution because they wish they had something like that in their country.
We don't live in times where you can defend yourself without a firearm, I believe.
It's very difficult to find somebody over here who is not familiar with the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
If we talk about America and the Second Amendment, we would love to be in America.
Folks, I'm so grateful for you, those of you who watch regularly and have shared the podcast with your friends. It means so much to hear from you. This is the cool thing about this kind of media. You know, when you're watching reports on television, you can't, you know, pick up the phone and call Anderson Cooper as if you'd want to, or you know, somebody like that and tell them what you think about the show. But you can do that now with this kind of technology. You can reach me on Facebook. Just look up the Hot Zone podcast with Chuck Holton on Facebook. You can reach me on Twitter if you dare. You can reach me by going to hotzoneholton@gmail.com and sending me an email, messenger, whatever. And I love to hear from you guys, especially if you've got suggestions or questions or things we can talk about on future podcasts. So please like and share the podcast, and we're going to keep on going. I'm just enjoying it too much to stop. So I hope you are too. Thanks for being with us. I'm Chuck Holton. Here's to another 100. We'll see you later.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.